Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there, and welcome to this very special season opening podcast. I'm Dan Moylan, and with me, Chief Executive of Leeds United, here's Angus Kinnear. Hello.
Great to be here.
Just the two of us today, but season kicks off this week. Are you ready?
We're ready, yeah.
Is Marcelo ready?
He's ready. He's ready. His contract isn't ready, but he is ready. No, I mean, I think we are very lucky to have a manager who is so exceptional at preparing a team for the start of the season, and his pre-seasons are absolutely meticulous, and bar the contract, I think we're in great shape.
Is that going to get signed ahead of the Man United game?
It will do. It'll be signed this week and announced to great excitement.
This is a hell of a hill to die on.
Yes, no, it's not even discussed. The discussions are all around preparation. It really is a formality that, as I said, I think I've said before on your show, we had a handshake probably 6 months ago, and it really is just the details. But every day he's talking to Victor, to Andrea, and to myself. But it's all about the preparations.
Can you give us a little insight into why it does take so long? I know you don't need to get into the actual clauses and the things that are maybe holding it up, but what is it that makes it take this long, right up to the eve of the season?
Fundamentally, it's his lack of interest in it. That's the reality. There are some minor points that we discuss, but really it's just getting his attention on it. He is so fixated on the season and the preparations. So we have minor points that occasionally come up when we can get him to engage on it, but actually it's much more around the lineups for the games, the transfer window, and that's where his priorities are, and we wouldn't have it any other way.
How does the club view pre-season then from the inside? Because I think, would you agree, it's getting a little bit antsy?
Yeah, I mean, I view it in two ways. So I view it as a supporter, and I'd love to see the team battering everybody that we play and scoring goals and not conceding goals after 6 seconds. But actually, when you view it from the inside, it's all about how ready we are when we step onto the pitch at 12:30 at Old Trafford. And what we know from Marcelo over the last three seasons is he's certainly the best manager I've worked with at getting a team ready to start a season. And actually, some of the pre-seasons haven't been that glorious. And when you get to work with him, you understand, players are at different points of their preparation cycle. So we've had players coming back from the Euros at different times. We've had players who've had COVID and haven't been able to train as regularly. We've had the two groups, so switching players between the under-23s and the first team. But it's a very, very carefully planned and meticulous approach to making sure that all the players are at both top fitness and technical preparation. The fitness levels, once again, are breaking records, even the records we saw last season. So the team has never been fitter, if that were possible, and that's a credit to Benoit and Rob Price. So we think it's in good shape. I think we'd have, everybody likes the results to be better, but I really don't think, and it's a cliche, but Marcelo doesn't care about the results. He cares about the progression from game to game. And I think across the weekend, with the performance at Villarreal and also with the under-23s at Man City, which I don't think was publicised, it was behind closed doors, but having seen that game, both teams are really starting to peak at exactly the right time.
There did seem to be a step up against Villarreal. You could start to see things falling into place. And then just going back to the Blackburn game, that was our first proper first team pre-season game, wasn't it? And they didn't look bad there either. But it also felt to me like they didn't really get out of second or third gear for a lot of it.
And they're working with team instructors. They're not going full out at this stage. And they've got targets they have to hit from a work rate. We've got lots of changes happening from the playing personnel side in terms of the number of substitutes he plays. So I think everybody should just look back at the last three seasons and be confident that he's going to have us in the right place. And if he doesn't, then it's not through lack of work, because the work behind the scenes has been once again phenomenal.
Can we talk contract extensions then? Because Marcelo's not quite yet put pen to paper. Hopefully that will be dealt with in the next few days. Although it's funny, I don't think there's a great deal of anxiety about him doing that. I think we all kind of accept that's just how he works now. But in terms of the players, we've seen a couple already through, thinking like Tyler Roberts, Stuart Dallas. Have we got others in the pipeline?
We have. There should be, I think, a couple more announced across the next few days. And it really reinforces the strategy that we've had from the moment we got promoted, which was to retain the core of the talent that we have and get those players on long-term contracts and ensure they're committed to Leeds in the long term. Because I think if you see the way they performed, not only getting us promoted from the Championship, but the first season in the Premier League, people like Stuart Dallas are talents that you want to retain at the club. And that's backed up by the acquisition strategy that we had in the first year. And I know that some supporters have been perhaps perplexed or disappointed about a perceived lack of activity this year, but that was always the plan. We wanted to build a squad on the year that we got promoted that could last us 2 to 3 seasons, would get us off and running. We ended up spending, I think, more than any other promoted team spent to get to that position. And that enabled us this year to be in a position where we've got strength in every single position. There were 2 specific positions we needed to address, which we did with the signing of Junior at left back and Klaussen at goalkeeper. And we've really delivered in terms of where we wanted to be from a transfer perspective.
Can you give us an idea of where the wages are at versus the Championship? You'd have to put a figure on it if you don't want, but multiples of, let's say.
It is a multiple. it's an uncomfortable multiple. But I think we've done it in a considered and sustainable way. And I think most importantly, when I look through the wage bill, I look at what the players are earning, and I think it's competitive, and they've deserved the increases that they get. So we're not overspent, and certainly this summer, you know, the business that we have done in the transfer window hasn't been restricted by finance. It's been restricted by being able to find the right quality of player who Marcelo thinks will strengthen the squad, and that's really challenging because he really believes in the squad now. You know, look at positions we were talking about earlier at the centre half, where I think we've got, you know, we can perm 2 from any 4 centre halves and go into any game feeling very confident. And that's where Marcelo believes we are at the moment. He doesn't want to destabilise the squad by bringing in players who aren't a significant improvement on what we've got at the moment.
Financially wise, can you give us an insight into what this summer has cost? Because I remember when we spoke last year, we were talking about like the signing of Rodrigo, for example, and I think it's Phil has said on one of the podcasts that we've done with him that we weren't actually on the hook for massive fees last year. There were only a few million changed hands. So have these deals been pushed into this summer? So that's had a bearing on where the outlay goes?
Yes. So we tried to delay payments from last summer because really we were still struggling under the impact of COVID and we didn't know how long that was going to go. So that was a difficult one to balance. So there are now transfer payments, significant transfer payments from those players coming in, but that's absolutely expected and hasn't limited our capability to bring in anybody else. But yeah, the reality is that the transfers that we made last summer will be paid over a number of years.
So can you talk us through the transfer window to this point? I mean, we're speaking just to date stamp this on the 9th of August on Monday. So there's what is the best part of a month left in the window just yet. So where are we in terms of junior Firpo's coming? Klaussen, as you said, there's been a lot of talk around A, midfield and B, winger. That seems to have been the message that's been consistently coming out of the club across the summer. Is that going to get done as well?
So in terms of where we are, I think we're delighted with the transfer of Junior. I think we've got a world-class left-back, hugely highly regarded. Before he signed for Barcelona, I don't think Barcelona worked out in the way that he'd have hoped, but he's been a brilliant addition already in terms of behind the scenes, a fantastic professional, works really hard, totally buying into the ethos. So we're very pleased about that. You know, we had offered Gianni a very healthy extension, which he decided to turn down, but we parted on good terms. And I think everyone will hopefully agree that we've now strengthened in that position. In terms of Klaussen, you know, he was actually a goalkeeper who Victor presented to Marcelo and the board at the same time as Ilan. And he was rated as highly as Ilan by Victor and the scouts. So we're very excited to have him. We think he's a great long-term prospect. And we made the decision, partly for Kiko's benefit, but mainly for the club's benefit, that we actually needed a young, developing goalkeeper as backup to Ilan, rather than somebody who's sort of at the sunset of his career. So we've allowed Kiko to move on. And I think we've got a really exciting talent who also, again, if the highlights of the Man City game are shown, has the capabilities in distribution that Marcelo demands. And that's quite hard to find in a goalkeeper. So we're excited about that.
In terms of Kiko, he's done an interview in Spain where he's saying he's sort of done in England. He won't be coming back. Is that likely to be the case from the club's perspective?
Well, there's another year after this one, so I think emotionally Kiko is probably wants to be back in Spain, and I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't return, but he's still under contract at Leeds for another 2 years.
I guess politically as well, with the difficulties surrounding his situation with the ban and all that, it's better for the club, for the fans, and for him overall that he's back in Spain now and not here.
I think it wasn't working for Kiko for a number of reasons, largely because he wasn't playing regularly, and he came to Leeds United to play regularly and be first choice. But obviously Ilan's form has been absolutely superb and made him probably one of the best young goalkeepers in Europe, if not the world. And so I think the fair thing to do was to give Kiko the opportunity to return home.
In terms of the outgoings, on top of Kiko, you mentioned Gianni there. Pablo's gone, Berardi's gone, Wasim Boy's gone. After 4 years, his contract expired. It's quite a lot of bodies. Some of them more first team than others, shall we say, have departed. Do you think we're going to fulfil Marcelo's desire to have two for every position? Because that seems to be one of the main starting points for the transfer policy.
Yeah, that's where we'll get to. I think there have been a lot of outs, both from a loan perspective and some permanent transfers as well. And that's about keeping the squad trim, ensuring that it's working from a financial perspective. You see this from a lot of clubs that get promoted as the team has to evolve quite quickly, because you end up with players who were maybe an emerging talent for a championship side but are no longer an emerging talent for a Premier League side. You end up with players who maybe towards the end of their career who could still do a job at championship level but can't do it at Premier League level. So Victor and his team have worked really hard to make some savings on the wage bill and allow those players to hopefully be successful elsewhere. And we've taken those savings and reinvested them at under 23 level. And, you know, I think players like Amari and Lewis Bate are going to follow in the footsteps and sort of same trajectory as we've seen with Geldart and Drama and Greenwood and Somerville, who are now all pushing for first team starts. And that's very much a pillar of our strategy in the long term, is to try and find the value of players who are 18 or 19. So you don't end up, I think Newcastle have just agreed a £25 million fee for Joe Willock. Eddie Nketiah is now valued at 20 million. So we're just trying to be smart and identify the talent before those prices go stratospheric. And we think we can create really good value for the club in the long term that way.
How do you perceive the market in terms of that? Because it feels like it's just bonkers that 20 million quid is the starting price for any young player now.
And that's the challenge. And that's why we believe you can work in advance of that. And actually having the players working with Marcelo. I mean, Marcelo spends so much time with the under 23s. You know, Mark Jackson does a great job, but Marcelo is working hand in hand with him. And we feel that they have a better chance of developing. You know, a player like Lewis Bate, I think, could have chosen most clubs in the country to join, but wanted to work under Marcelo because he was ambitious and wanted to develop as a player. So I think if we can work at the level before they get to 20, you know, because buying English players at 20 to 25 million who really still haven't properly delivered in the Premier League, you know, Nketiah, Willock, both fantastic talents, but that's, you know, they are big bets to put on players to deliver immediately in the Premier League, and we think the level just before that's probably the optimal time to purchase them.
When these younger players join, and let's say Lewis Bates, one of the more recent examples, what's the sort of time frame then? Is there an idea of a time frame to get them towards first team contention? Because there was a lot of clamour for Joe Gellhart towards the back end of the season. We haven't quite seen him yet. Presumably this year, him and the cohort around him are going to be that bit closer. Is it a 2 year process?
Marcelo works on the basis that you're ready when you're ready, but we see it as a 2 year process. And I think Marcelo would agree with that effectively there is a year in the under 23s. And then I think this season we'll be seeing Drama, Geldart, Greenwood, Somerville on the bench regularly and making an impact in the first team. I think they're all players who can come on and make an impact. And I actually think probably in the next tier, you know, Lewis probably isn't too far behind them. I think he's probably a little bit more advanced than some of the other players we've got. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him potentially featuring as well. But, you know, Marcelo run, you know, it's very much a meritocracy at the training ground. If you're good enough, you're old enough. So there's no prescribed plan.
What's the market looking like this year? Because there have been some really big deals gone through the very top end of the market. Would you describe it as sluggish? It feels sluggish so far looking from the outside. Am I imagining that?
No, it's generally quiet. I think it's driven by clubs in Europe struggling from COVID, clubs in the championships particularly struggling from COVID. So those types of play deals that might have gone through with championship teams paying, you know, £6 or 7 million. I think other than Fulham buying Harry Wilson, there haven't really been many championship big buys. I think some of the deals which are happening at the top level will liquidate the market to an or create liquidity in the market to an extent. So you've seen that already with Jack Grealish, and that's, you know, cascaded down with Ings and Buendia. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Norwich and Southampton reinvesting that money. So I think there'll be some movement, but generally we expected it to be slow. It is going to be slow. You know, teams are nursing losses in the tens of millions from COVID. And so, you know, no one's prepared to take big gambles on mediocre players.
Is the club ready to pounce to take advantage of that situation then going into the final weeks of the season? Of the window, sorry.
Yeah, we are ready. I think we proved it last year with Rafinha, who wasn't a player that was in the master plan, but was a last minute opportunity. But it will take a special opportunity to emerge. So at the moment, I don't think there's going to be a significant amount of business done between now and the end of the season. But the fans should rest assured that we have a great team of scouts led by Victor, who are continually monitoring the market. And it was Victor's insight and his relationship with Deco, who is Rafinha's manager, who enabled us to act first in that deal. And I think secure not only a great player for the club, but fantastic value in the long term. So we're always ready.
When it comes to Jack Grealish, you mentioned him there. Is that situation there, is that a warning for the future for us regarding Calvin Phillips? Because he had a stellar Euros. He was amazing, wasn't he?
It's a warning for now. This summer, we've received a number of firm expressions of interest and some offers for players that would be perceived as our marquee talent. And we've received offers for or interest in players at the level below that. But even the level below that is in the tens of millions for some of the players. None of them have been entertained. No discussions have taken place. No negotiations have taken place. The first objective for this season, the transfer window, was holding the team together. And I know you'll never get any credit. You know, clubs never get any credit for that. But Ilan, Calvin, Patrick, those players are right at the core of Stuart Dallas. All the players right at the core of what we've done. They're not for sale. We've made the market very clear to the market they're not for sale. And I think that's going to be the core of our success next season, is that we've resisted any of those types of offers. But the reality is that you know, ultimately, every, you know, and I think this was proven at Aston Villa, you know, hugely ambitious club, really well run, really well backed. But ultimately, the lure of Champions League and to play for a team which is going to win trophies turned the player's head. I know from Christian, the chief executive of Aston Villa, they didn't have to sell him even at that value, and they wanted to keep him. But when the player ultimately wants to go, then you have a problem. So our job, which I think Marcelo and Victor and Andrea are fantastic at, is making sure all the players feel wanted and valued, and that they can grow at Leeds United.
Well, Calvin will be going into, what, 2 years left in the summer next year? So will that be something you'd look to do with 2 years left, or is it not something you're looking to do?
No, I mean, Calvin's a long-term pillar for the club. So you know, we'll work with Calvin and his representatives, you know, to make sure he feels valued and motivated and wants to be at Leeds United. But at the moment, he's got 3 years on his contract, and it's a healthy contract, so we don't have to rush into any of these things. But we defend our interest in our players very vigorously in the marketplace.
In terms of the midfield situation then, can you confirm that Conor Gallagher was a player that we were interested in, that one fell by the wayside?
He was, but as part of a long list, so it was not critical to the plans. But I think he's a player that our scouting team thought had potential. One of the challenges we have in securing, you know, and I think Conor was a loan player, is that you have to be guaranteeing a loan player first in football at that level. And you know, when we look at our loan players, it's going to be very difficult. When we look at our loan stretch, it's very difficult to look at who in the team's going to be shifted out of their position by a loan player. And that's why, you know, I don't think you'll see much loan activity this season.
Do you think the club's in a slightly difficult or slightly harder position when it comes to recruitment then because of that? Because it's difficult to guarantee game time. You're also asking players to buy into what you described as the ethos before. Does that create its own challenges when entering the market?
Not for the right quality of player, the right quality of player and the right mentality. I don't think we're not ashamed of the fact we have very high benchmarks for the players that we want to bring in. They have to have the talent. They have to have the confidence that they're going to be able to force their way in the team. They're going to have the ambition and discipline to be prepared to work with Marcelo and the regime that he puts the team through. And if they're not, then they're not the right players for Leeds United. So we're not apologetic about that. We want to create a high bar for players to join. And if we get any sense that the player isn't up for the battle, then we know they're not right for us.
Well, what can you say about Lewis O'Brien then?
Plays for Huddersfield.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the one. Lewis is, you know, again, his name's been on the scouting reports, but there's no movement on that at the moment.
Okay, and will we get a midfielder then, do you think, with the market looking like it is and maybe those parameters being set by the club and by Marcelo? Do you think it's going to be, there's going to be somebody added to the roster between now and the close of the window? $1 million question, or $64 million question, probably.
If I was going to bet on it, I would suggest that there'll be little movement between now and the end of the season. But if you'd have asked me at the same time last season, I'd have said there wouldn't have been any movement, and then we bought in Rafinha. So it can change, and the strategy is very much to be ready, but it has to be an exceptional opportunity, and it has to be a player that really moves the team forward.
We've seen names like Nandez at Cagliari and Cunha, who's at Hertha Berlin, being floated around. Any comments on those players and the links? You've got a smile coming onto your face.
I thought you were going to talk about how upset you were about Rodrigo De Paul suddenly being out of the...
I did not mention his name out
of the picture. The reality is that the names that get linked with us in the press all feature on the scouting reports because they're players of exceptional caliber. But to date, there has been nobody that we have pursued with any firm intent and meaningfully missed out on.
So what does the rest of the window look like from a Leeds United perspective now then? Is it a case of sit and wait, see what happens in the market, see if things start to move, see if the right player becomes available? Where are you positioned at the minute?
Yeah, I think sit and wait is probably unfair on the guys. It's a very active process. They are speaking to clubs, they're speaking to agents, they're monitoring the marketplace, trying to identify whether an exceptional opportunity arises. But to reassure everybody, there is absolutely no panic at the training ground, and I think Marcelo and Victor and Andrea are very, very comfortable, and actually the team as well are very comfortable going into the first games with the team that we have and served us so well last season with the additions of the addition of Junior at left back. But we're always on the lookout, and I think we're very good at taking the opportunities when they arise. And I think the trading strategy that generated such great value with Robin and Diego and Rafinha and Rodrigo, we're not going to move away from that. So there's going to be no panic buying. And as I said, the strategy from what it was a year ago was to get it right last summer. We think we did get it right last summer, and we think we've built a team which can last us at least 2 years in this league, particularly when you overlay the fact that we've been able to resist any offers for the marquee talent.
But you do know that fans are going to hear that and are going to sigh and find that disappointing, and it'll possibly fuel the slightly antsy feeling that's been around in close season. And it's not glamorous from a supporter perspective, but I guess you're dealing in more practical terms there. So what's your message to the people who are going to find that disappointing, who think that the club is either standing still or even going backwards?
I understand the frustration. I understand the narrative that signing players is exciting, and we get excited by it too. But I think the... driven by Marcelo and Victor, there is a bigger picture here. Marcelo doesn't want to buy players which destabilise the club. He doesn't want to buy players which aren't going to fit in, which are going to damage the ethos. There's very much a team. There is a team spirit there that we don't want to damage. It served us really, really well. So I think people have to look beyond. There's an exciting name, and there's a great YouTube's highlights of them. And wouldn't it be great to have them versus what does it mean for the team we have at the moment? Where would they fit in? Do they have the ethos? Do they have the work rate? Do they have the principles? Are they the right type of character? What does it mean from a salary perspective? But what I can categorically say is, and I've read it a few times, the transfer window today to date and going forward hasn't been shaped or influenced by financial limitations. We have fantastic backing from Andrea, fantastic backing from the 49ers. The club's performing very well commercially, and we're in a healthy position. But sometimes being selective and discerning is the right decision, and filling the squad with people who aren't up to the level or aren't going to fit with the current squad is really counterproductive.
Well, final question on transfers, then we'll ask a couple of questions about the financial side. Is Marcelo hard to buy for?
He's incredibly demanding. It's a good question to ask Victor. He'd give a much fuller answer. He is hugely demanding in terms of the filters he puts through the players. I know at other clubs that some managers will, if they're offered a player, they will take them because they think it can only strengthen the squad. Marcelo is hugely discerning. It's all about the fit, how many people we have that in that position, their flexibility, their ethos, whether they can play with his principles. So far more players are turned down than accepted. But it's a really good process. I've been at other clubs and it doesn't work as well as this. And the relationship between Marcelo and Victor is really strong. Victor's very creative. He's got unrivaled knowledge. We've got a fantastic scouting team. But we have a manager who's really engaged and understands quite how vital recruitment is. But the great thing about Marcelo as well, he also understands where value lies. Other managers in the marketplace, you know, don't care about how much a player costs or what the club pays for them. But Marcelo does. He wants to do the right things by the clubs. He doesn't want money wasted on a rushed or low value purchase in now, if it's something that we could maybe buy and strengthen in January or later on. And where he's been particularly interested, he's been very interested again at under 23 level. And all those players are vetted by him as well. And again, I think that's where in future years, some of the big signings and the big players we have will have been seen as low level signings at the time, but could turn out into being big players.
In terms of the financial robustness of the club, we obviously dealt with COVID in the last 12, 18 months. I saw Andrea quoted somewhere, I don't know if this is true, you can either confirm or deny, that it's cost the club somewhere in the region of 60 million quid in lost revenue because of lockdowns and no fans and so on.
It's tens of millions of pounds, and it was unfortunate to be doing it in a season where we got promoted, when we could have capitalised on some of those commercial opportunities. But on the other hand, it was probably fortunate that we were able to rely on the TV revenue, which wasn't diminished to the same level as things like ticketing, which were decimated, and that helped us build across the last year. But it required increased commitment from both Andrea and Jed and Parag at the 49ers. They had to step up again to back the club. So we're in a really healthy position. We've got ownership who are still very committed to the long term, and the financial position is robust. But we need to recognise that we invested incredibly heavily, and I think, you know, perhaps from a fan perspective, we could have done half what we did last year and half what we did this year, and people would have been happy with it because it would have seemed like there was more activity. But actually, front weighting it, which we did from a technical perspective, was more challenging actually from a financial perspective because it put more weight on last year. But we think actually that's been the best strategy, because we now have a Diego Llorente who's played half a season in the Premier League, Robin Koch who's played half a season in the Premier League, Rafinha who will only get better, and then, you know, we've made the signings of Ilan and Jack permanent as well. I think if you look at it across two seasons, then I think the business that we've done has shown that there's no shortage of financial firepower and no shortage of ability in identifying players who are who can move the club forward.
I know what the answer to this is going to be, because it's going to be a political answer, but I'm curious to find out about the relationship with the 49ers. And as minority shareholders, they're still happy to pony up for something they don't control.
I mean, the relationship between the 49ers and Andrea, it's very much a partnership. I think that minority shareholder position can be different in a football club, particularly if there's tension between the ownership groups. But there's very much a shared vision. The 49ers are very excited by the longer-term potential. And the relationship that we hoped we'd have when they came on board is exactly the one that we do have, where they're committed. Parag and Jed are both flying over this month for games here. They want to be here at the start of the season. It's been frustrating because they haven't been able to travel. But I think it's a really healthy mix, Andrea's ASA group and the broader 49ers ventures.
And Peter Lowy on the board. There's one that interests me, because there's a man who's bought in through 49ers Enterprises, so he's part of that vehicle. A Leeds fan and a man with a lot of money.
It's a great mix. Peter is a massive fan. He talked about his love for Leeds United coming when he couldn't actually watch Match of the Day, but it got broadcast as a radio feed in Australia, and he listened to it using a coat hanger on his radio to be able to hear Leeds United. So he's a huge fan. He's actually flying over from the States for the Manchester United game. But he also is a tremendous asset for the board as well. He's been immensely successful in his career and with the Westfield Group. Obviously very appropriate skills for stadium development and ancillary development around the ground, and he'll play a big part in that. But from my perspective, the best thing about him, he's absolutely Leeds through and through, and that's exactly the type of person we need on the board.
Was it that skill set that brought him onto the board, as well as the tremendous wealth?
Yeah, I mean, the 49ers were, their investment group has they've deliberately gone out to approach and engage people who have a broad skill set. So I think, you know, at board level now, with the expertise of the ASA group run by Andrea and the 49ers investment group, we're in a really strong position. And I think Peter will play a big role in the club going forward.
And presumably fans returning is going to be a welcome boon for everybody. I think we're all giddy with excitement, looking forward to getting back in against Everton and the lucky ones who've made it to Old Trafford, because we are recording on the day of the ticketing announcements, and good luck trying to explain this one. Should we have a chat about the tickets?
Sure.
We were in a situation where demand hugely outstrips supply. So can you talk us through the home and away ticketing policies, what the general sense of things is at the club? Because basically you're always going to piss somebody off.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating for all of us. I think when I joined the club 4 years ago, we didn't open the upper tier of the East Stand because we didn't have enough supporters to put in it, and it was done as a cost saving. And now we're in a position where we could sell the ground out three times over. I mean, the increase in interest has been absolutely phenomenal. And I know this creates some tension between the supporters who feel they've been more loyal or attended more regularly through some of the more challenging years versus some of the newer supporters who are becoming either re-engaged in the club or supporting us for the first time. And so for the club, we're trying to create a balance between rewarding the loyalty of the supporters who've stuck through us because they've seen some challenging times, and the support has been phenomenal. But also we have a responsibility, if we're going to keep Leeds operating at the highest level, to engage new supporters and to grow the fan base and to diversify the fan base and to become more international. And I think from my perspective, what we want to try and do is make that a harmonious process and make the supporters who've been around for longer feel that that embracing new supporters and making Leeds United bigger and better is in all our interests. And we've tried to come up with a ticketing policy which is founded on rewarding loyalty. So away tickets is a good example, where 2/3 of the tickets will go to supporters who have high away attendance records. But then there'll be a small amount which will be available for season ticket holders, an even smaller amount will be available for members, because we believe at the club that being a Leeds United supporter, you should have a chance, even if only very rarely, to have the privilege and joy of supporting Leeds United away from home. So rather than a small group of fans being able to go to every game, we've tried to create a mix where the fans who've traditionally gone to every game still can, fans who've been to half the games historically still can, but there is some tickets for new supporters who want to buy into the magic of supporting Leeds United. And all I'd ask as we go through this process, that we try and maintain the unity that I think have made the club great over the last 3 years, because it's just disappointing to see supporters fighting over tickets. It's a frustrating situation. The ultimate solution is in a redeveloped stadium, and we're working on that, but it's not going to solve it for the next couple of years.
So the redeveloped stadium will be three times the size of the current stadium. So that's what, 80,000 we're going for at that rate.
It's going to need to be substantially bigger. I mean, we saw it in shirt sales. The away kit and home kit have both had record weeks since launch. But we're going to be in a position where we're going to be selling 300,000 shirts when we were selling 20,000 4 years ago. So the growth has been phenomenal. It's one of the things which makes Leeds special, which is going to give us a competitive advantage in the long run in the Premier League. I think, you know, we're on track to have the seventh highest commercial revenues. There's still a very big gap between us and the so-called Big Six, but we intend to close that. And with a fan base we have the capability to do that. But it is going to I think there'll be some tension as we navigate through it. And we've seen it on home tickets already, because, you know, a game like Everton, again, we could have sold it out three times over. Old Trafford, we have 3,000 tickets. We think we could have sold 50,000. So there are going to be people who are going to be disappointed, and we just need to hope that they believe we're trying to do it in as fair and equitable way as possible.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah, there's not a lot you can do about the away tickets, given that they're capped at 3,000, is it? Apart from find, I guess, the fairest way to do it. And fingers crossed. I mean, to the club's credit, I think it's good that you engaged the supporters advisory board and listened to them and heard them out and made tweaks to it. So credit to the club for that. I mean, we'll get onto the engagement side of things in just a minute or two. With the home tickets, do you think you can justify a £75 membership? Because your chances of getting tickets are pretty slim, and that's really what people want when it comes to memberships.
Yeah, I mean, our research in membership shows. So the £75 is the more expensive membership product. There are ones that are lower than that, and you know, people do have a value in the affiliation. They have a value in LUTV. They find a value in the pack that they've received historically. I mean, what price do you put on a musical bottle opener? But clearly, it comes down to ticketing, and we're going to have to continue to evaluate what the demand's going to be for tickets. You know, when we had a membership scheme at Arsenal, the majority of members didn't apply for tickets. You know, membership was what was enough. I think that would be different at Leeds. So part of the process that we're going through, and I think, you know, the Supporters Advisory Board did a fantastic job on away tickets. We had a straw man proposal that we thought was right, and they very clearly and constructively fed back about how we needed to evolve it, and we got to the right place on it. I think across this year on membership, and as we see what home ticketing demand looks like, we'll have to evolve the proposition. It's not off the table that we won't have introduced an element of loyalty into home tickets, so that people who attend more regularly have a slightly earlier window. The higher level of membership does give you access to the ticket exchange, which we launched for the first time this year. We're really hoping that fans use the ticket exchange, because it's important for two reasons. One is it gives members a chance to come to matches that season ticket holders can't. But the second is it means that Ellen Road's always full, and we know that, you know, at stadiums you can have 5 to 10% no shows, and we don't want that. We want every seat full on the basis that we know so many people are going to want tickets. We're also upgrading our ticketing software, and next season we'll have a much better balloting functionality. So it might be that we can move away from this mad scramble for tickets on the day that they're launched, and the sort of fastest finger first solution to a balloted approach. So I think this year is going to be far from perfect, but we'll learn some lessons, and our intention is twofold. One is to ensure that we keep tickets affordable, as affordable as we can. And we've frozen children's tickets again this season. So it's £5 and £10 to watch Leeds United versus Man United. It's the most attractive child's ticketing policy in the Premier League. Season tickets are frozen again for a 10th year in a row. There's small increases on match by match tickets, but they're going to be behind inflation, and they're going to be based on largely driven towards some of the bigger games. We think that's very fair, but we know we've got some work to do in making sure that we can distribute the tickets in as fair a way as possible. And we'll keep listening to supporters, and we'll keep improving.
I mean, speaking just for myself, I look at the release of the prices today, and you've released like there's an A+ category, and there's going to be an A and a B, depending on the fixtures. Yeah, my criticism, if there was to be one, would be about the price of the membership, because you're asking a lot of money for a small chance of a ticket. It feels like a lot of money. And that would be the criticism I would think that you could level at it, that it seems to be trying to strip money out of fans for what isn't already an expensive business.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the take up on membership is, and then how many people apply for every game. I think there's a perception that, you know, members are only just interested in the tickets. It is a bit broader than that, but I think it will be up for review. And if we've ended up putting out a product which, you know, doesn't have any value because people can't get the tickets, then it'll obviously need to evolve and change.
What will the split be roughly, do you know, on the A+, A, B categories? Have you got a rough idea at this stage?
We'll decide it across the season. So it's going to depend on a number of things. It'll depend on the timing of games. It'll depend on whether they're on TV. It'll depend on how well the team are performing. So if we're performing appallingly, then the games will change. But I think it's you're effectively looking at it's being split evenly over the 19 games, 6, 6, and 6. Appreciate that's not 19, but roughly like that. But it may change, and as I said, it'll depend on a number of factors.
In terms of COVID protocols, is there anything that we need to be aware of coming back for the first home match? Is anything in place there? Because I've completely lost track, to be honest, of what needs to happen in what part of the country, and, you know, for each sport or each event.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, we're hoping for, from a supporter's perspective, that it's a return to normal. So I was at a Fortress Kenilworth Road on Saturday, and the experience for Luton Town fans was exactly the same as it was pre-COVID. No checks, no surveys, no masks. So I think from a supporter's perspective, it shouldn't impact them too significantly. The only thing that we're currently working through, and this is the big challenge that Premier League teams are facing, is that unlike the EFL, the Premier League are demanding that players still socially distance. And that brings some challenges, because last season when we had the players socially distancing, it meant that the away team changed in the players lounge. The drug testing room was in the Norman Hunter. So we used the whole of the West Stand. The referees changed in the president's suite. So the whole of the West Stand was used as a facility to keep the players apart. We're now in a position where the players still have to socially distance. And that's because the risk of infection is still there, and ultimately the Premier League, and it's the right thing from the Premier League. They want to protect the integrity of the match fixtures. But we're now in a situation where we have to socially distance the players in a full stadium. That's going to be more challenging. So supporters will see that we'll be building an away dressing room complex in the car park behind the West Stand.
It sounds glamorous.
Exactly. It's going to involve some different movements of supporters. There are going to be some seat kills that we have to put in place for protecting the gap around the benches, and there'll be some screens put in place as well. Some screens around some of the media facilities. So there are going to be some changes to the stadiums, and all the supporters who are going to be impacted by that will be hearing it across the next few days. We apologise that it's so late, but these rules are evolving day by day. Our vision has always been that every fan gets to sit in their seat with an experience which isn't impacted, but it looks like there will be several hundred supporters in different areas whose match day experience might change.
Because there have been people who've said the front of the West Stand, you know, the seats that came out for the TV interviews, are they going back in or not?
They're going back in.
Right.
But there is some space that's need to be made behind the benches. And so there'll be some moves there. And there will also, for separate reasons, but there'll also be some rail seating placed into the North Stand as a trial.
Yeah. How much of that is going in?
On the rail seating?
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably going to be somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 to start with as a trial. And if it works out, then we'll be looking to roll it out more across more of the areas where, only in the areas where persistent standing is an issue.
So all of the away games.
Yeah, exactly.
and north and south. So that is just a trial at this stage. Do you know which part of the cop they're going in? Is it front, back, middle, south?
It's done from the back. That's as specific as I know. So that they haven't the exact locations, but it'll be done from the back, and then it'll move forward if it's successful.
Okay, and what's prompted that is just the persistent standing and the fact that you're getting it in the ear from the safety authorities.
Yeah, we're not getting in the ear from them. We're having constructive dialogue with them. Ellen Road has been highlighted as one of the stadia with the highest risk of what's called a progressive crowd collapse, which is people falling over the seats.
Which we've seen sometimes,
yeah, exactly.
Actually.
Yeah. I think the supporters refer to it as limbs.
Yeah.
So it's to avoid that issue. Ultimately, it's not safe standing, and you're still not allowed to have safe standing or advertise it as safe standing, but it means that if a supporter were to persistently stand and they were pushed forward, they'd be fall into the rail rather than into the person before them. So it's just about making it safer. I mean, our long-term objective is to allow supporters to enjoy the game the way they want to. So if they want to stand, we're fully supportive of standing. And we think ultimately, and certainly in the new stadium, we would have a stadium which is a combination of seated and standing, so that supporters could enjoy the game they want in the way they want to.
In terms of the development around the ground, the racing seat dugouts, they always prompt questions. Are they going to go in for the new season?
They're not in for we've held off on those for COVID reasons and the work that needs to be done around the dugout, but it's on the development master plan. The big piece of work that has been done is the pitch has been totally a full reconstruction. So it's £2 million. It's why the first game of the season is away from home. So we had an extra a week to get it right, and we'll end up with a world class playing surface. And at the same time, we've done the same at the training ground, so that the pitch that the players train on will be the same, exactly the same as the pitch they'll play on week in, week out.
Sounds like a Marcelo request to me, does that?
It's exactly a Marcelo request. to be fair to the groundsman, Kyle, our groundsman, has done probably the best job in English football in terms of maintaining the Leeds pitch to the standard that it has been maintained. I think I've said before, but he came with a letter saying that from an independent pitch consultant saying that the pitch was 5 years out of date. And needed to be reconstructed immediately. And I looked at the letter, and it was dated 2009. The last pitch was 20 years overdue. So the ground staff did a fantastic job. But ultimately, we can't have anything. And we would have changed it last season, but for the COVID window was too short to do that. So this year we're going to give, you know, we're going to have the players playing on the surface that they deserve to play on.
Yeah, they look really nice, the hybrid, those hybrid pitches with the stitching. Very fancy. I've got very granular on it. Very granular indeed. In terms of all the stuff at the training ground, I presume Marcelo's been cracking the whip. You've mentioned it in interviews in passing a couple of times.
Yes, there's been some. Again, he takes the training ground is on a continued journey of self improvement. I think we've had another 250 lorries of soil removed to ensure we maximise every single space. So there are now no undulations. There's new access roads. To be honest, we're lucky to have a manager who's so engaged in the broader interests of the club, and he's worked fantastically and tirelessly with Mark Broadley, our facilities director, to continue making evolving Thorpe Arch into a truly a Premier League training ground.
And with 8 years left on the lease, is there a medium term plan there around that?
Yeah, we think we have identified and explored other options for Thorpe Arch. I think ultimately we're going to need more space if you want to deliver the training environment that we think will be best in class. And there's two ways to do that. One is to move the academy and have the academy and first team facilities separate. Or the other one is to find a bigger site or expand Thorpe Arch and effectively create more of a divide. The challenge at the moment is that the academy and the first team have to completely coexist. And that's not best in class. I think best in class is you have both sites together, but they are separated. And so as you have the parents of 20 11-year-olds turning up at 5 o'clock, they're not mixing with the first team who are finishing a training session. And under Marcelo's watch, the training grounds become a 24/7 operation. So it used to be dead by the afternoons. It's now busy all day every day.
And do you think that's the likeliest outcome, is you will look at a new site, and if the right site comes up, then you'll look to move?
Both are equally valid at the moment. It could be an expansion, or it could be a new site. You know, we had the vision of moving the academy back into the city centre at the Matthew Murray site, but ultimately we decided that there was a more pressing need for the community facilities to go there. So the community sports hub that the foundation team will be running, which is going to be a fantastic home for our foundation, and will be, I think, the best community sports facility in the country. That's going to be opening in, I think, 18 months or 2 years in Holbeck, in one of the most deserving parts of our city. It's going to be a fantastic facility. It's in the shadow of Allen Road. And we decided that in that case, we needed to put community first and therefore be looking for other sites.
So that's the Matthew Murray site. That's where the community hub will go. And it allows the club to expand Allen Road as well. So where are we on that timeline in terms of the expansion? Because we've spoken over the last 12 months about maybe by the time the third year is secured in the Premier League, you can push the button on it. So where are we now?
So we're still moving forward on it. We have had good conversations with Leeds City Council. So that was also part of the decision to move the community sports hub, because that actually impacted the footprint that we'd need to go to 60,000. So we protected a footprint to go to 55, but to go to 60, you need more. So the community sports hub now is not in that is now not in that space, which allows us to move the West Stand back. The West Stand would be the first stand that we develop because it's the oldest and has the most upside potential. So those discussions are in place with the council. The deal on the land will be announced very shortly. Plans are continuing to move forward. But really the focus for the club from a day-to-day perspective is just maintaining our Premier League status and flourishing in the Premier League. I think after another year, we can really start to accelerate the plans, because every single day we're proving the need that a new stadium is, or a significant stadium redevelopment is the key which takes us to the next level. And if you look at the revenues that the bigger clubs are generating from the stadium, I think Spurs are generating £5 million a game. That's £100 million across the course of the season. We're just over 20. So before you get into sponsorship, there's really a significant gap in ticketing revenue. And there's very few clubs in the country that could justify a 60,000 seat stadium, but Leeds United is one of them. And I know that's part of Andrea's vision and part of the 49ers vision.
It's interesting that it's evolved from 55 up towards 60. Do you think that's what you're going to go for now?
I think so. But based on we had to make some projections around what we thought demand would be like in the Premier League, and they were too pessimistic by quite a factor. So, when we've seen the demand for tickets, when we've seen the demand for shirts, we've seen how quickly the fan base is growing. I think the upper end of that is more likely, but ultimately it will depend on the construction costs and the value they get from it. And it might be that it's done in a number of phases as well.
So what does a new West Stand at Elland Road look like in terms of split between corporate, general admission? You know, price-wise, would we expect to see a price rise to accommodate the expenditure?
The strategy, and I've seen this done very successfully at Arsenal and West Ham, is that it's the corporate seats that drive the revenue going forward. And in at both Arsenal and at West Ham, there was no increase in GA seats as part of a stadium development or stadium move. So I think whilst there's always some reluctance from supporters to welcome more premium tickets into the ground, it's actually the fact which enables GA tickets to be pinned and not have to increase. So I think from a mixed perspective, there would be more premium seats, but there would also be significantly more GA seats, and it would allow those GA seats to be sold at the same prices or similar prices to they are now.
Because that's the concern, is that if you're cynical about the redevelopment, you go, well, it's all going to be corporate. I'll never get in there anyway.
No, it's when you look at the demand profile, there is a demand for more corporate seats, but there's as big a demand for more GA seats, and ultimately you need to deliver against both. So it will be significant increases in both.
So would the plan at this stage be West Stand first, then maybe moving around to the Kop, the north side?
Yeah.
Would it involve the corners as well?
The idea would be for atmosphere purposes to ensure that it's a bowl rather than four separate stands. The phasing is open to debate, but you can either do the west and north at the same time, or you can do them separately. Key is that you protect the attendance for the season that you're doing it. So the way that works is you build over the existing stand, so the supporters can still sit in their seats, and then the next season they move upstairs, and then you build the tier below it. So ideally you don't lose significant capacity during the construction process. West and north can be done together; they can be done sequentially, and then it's about joining it up to the east stand, and it's more of a redevelopment of the east stand than a knocking it down and starting again. And then the south stand's the most challenging because you've got Elland Road behind it, so you don't have the footprint behind to expand. So that would probably that would limit the expansion on that side.
Do you think you get the shipping container boxes out of the south stand eventually when corporate is you're able to sell corporate in the new west, for example?
Yeah, that's the south stand would need to be taken down and started again.
Right, but just a smaller.
But if it just doesn't have the depth, it wouldn't have right. The depth of the other.
Do you think you could expand a little bit of capacity though? Maybe going back over the road a little bit, cantilevering
yes.
it.
Or, yeah, no, okay. definitely. I mean, no one would design a stand now with shipping containers forming that.
For anybody who doesn't know that, yeah, it was Bill Fotherby's idea. He put shipping containers in as exec boxes, didn't he?
Yeah, so it's not best in class. There's still a lot you can do with that stand, and yes, you can go back. You can go back over the road.
So we're basically looking at everything, eventually everything but east, and then the east yeah. will be tarted up to sort of match the rest of it.
The key is that it's done in a way which is which doesn't dent performance on the pitch and how we develop on the pitch, because we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, and that's why one of the reasons we haven't communicated extensively on new stadia, because we know lots of other clubs will. It's very easy to circulate some stunning virtual reality graphics and fly throughs, which we have, but we haven't gone out there because we want to go out with a story.
Can I see it? I won't tell anybody.
We want to go out with a story that I'll show you. We want to go out with a story that we know we can deliver on with a short time frame. And it's one of the things we've tried to do at the club, is rather than talk about things we might do, we want to talk about things we're actually going to do. So I think supporters should know that there is a vision and there's a plan, and it's a key pillar of taking Leeds United to where we think they should be.
So if we stay up then this year, would you push the button on it for, yeah, when would construction start, is what I'm asking?
If we stay up this year, then construction wouldn't start next year, but the process would, and that the process is planning full designs. And actually the commitment you do, the commitment you spend, the quantum of the commitment, you financial commitment you need before you start construction is tens of millions of pounds. So that's the first gate that you need to go through, as we are up again, and therefore there's tens of millions of pounds to take us to the point where you can put a shovel in the ground.
Okay, so a couple of years down the line when you're going to start maybe breaking ground then. In terms of the kits, you mentioned them before. When are you going to put some proper yellow on the kits for a legacy fan like me who's never going to buy a shirt anyway?
Well, you've answered the question. again, the kits are another great, great topic of debate, and we are trying to maintain the balance between doing things which push the kit design forward and appeal to new audiences, but also retain our loyal fans and give them something that they can purchase as well. To date, I think we've done a reasonable job in it. The kit sales have been absolutely phenomenal. We've still got the third kit to come, which I don't think will appeal to the traditionalist in you.
Is this lilac, Angus? Blink once if yes, twice if no.
But I think generally we're walking a good sort of balance between things which are innovative and have some design features which interest people and want to broaden the appeal of the club. But at the same time, I think even the most staunch loyalist and traditionalist wouldn't get too upset about a slight change in the shade of yellow.
Oh, I don't know. I don't like that yellow, but actually I've grown to like the kit. It's not too bad. And at the end of the day, I mean, who am I to argue with the sales? And I guess it's driven by that at the end of the day.
I mean, we're not totally driven by sales. We don't want to forget that you know, the core of the club. But ultimately, I think sales and doing the right thing by the fans are pretty well linked. So if you do something which actually completely disrespects the heritage, and you know, you move to a kit where Leeds United wouldn't play in white at home, not only is that the wrong thing to do from a club perspective, it would be the wrong thing to do from a sales perspective. The response that you get from supporters is evidenced by what's bought. But ultimately, we're not driven just by sales. We're driven by giving something people love and want to see the team in, and actually the team want to play in as well.
Yellow Adidas stripes, that's all I'm asking. Just yellow Adidas on that blue kit, put yellow ones on it, and I'll go buy it right now. You can have how much is it? 75 quid for a shirt these days?
No, I don't think it's that expensive.
It's bloody expensive. And early September, is it for the third? We're looking around early September.
Yeah.
And it's not going to please the traditionalists. Let's just go back to that, just so people can get furious about something.
I think the third kit's the one where we can always be the most experimental.
Okay. So not yellow then. Another year for old gold or yellow? Just one. All I'm asking is just one year. That's all I want.
I think it's round the corner, I think.
And speaking of legacy fans, we can't close this show out without talking about the commercial link up with Socios, because that it provoked a response. Again, I'm throwing a blanket over it. It's the legacy fans who are kind of going, what the hell is that? It's not met with universal welcoming arms across the football spectrum. Other clubs have done it. Can you talk us through that from the club's perspective then?
I completely understand some of the supporters' reservations. No, it's not going to be for everyone. But at the same time, we want to ensure that the club are positioned well commercially and at the forefront of new developments in the industry and in society more generally that might be beneficial to the club. We think that blockchain and cryptocurrency and supporter tokens are going to play a significant role in football clubs going forward. We are far from forging the way on this one. We're the 42nd club to sign an agreement with Socios. I think they've got at least a couple of million supporters who've bought them, and I think there's 30 million tokens in circulation. So it's a fairly, although it's early, it's still quite a well-established product. And I think the key thing for supporters to realise is, I mean, firstly, this is financially beneficial to the club. And this is not talking about supporter money. This is talking about money that Socios invested in Leeds United as part of the partnership. And it's a meaningful sum, and it will make a difference to Leeds United. But also, as we start to reveal more details about the product, I think a lot of the concerns are going to be diluted. The first one is, I think the Supporters Trust came out and said it was, you know, they didn't like it because it was about monetizing fan engagement, which struck me as a little odd because professional football clubs are fundamentally about monetizing fan engagement, whether that's selling tickets or broadcast rights or, you know, we want supporters to engage in the brand, and often there's a financial transaction. So that's not unusual. What would be unusual if this was about monetizing fan influence? And it's categorically not about monetizing fan influence. I think any of the supporters who've worked with me on the supporters advisory board or in the media or in any of the supporters groups know that I am, you know, I've got firm beliefs and principles about how a supporters club can be run. I've been to part of a supporters trust. I think they're, you know, critical to how a club operates. The same with our supporters groups, the same with the supporters advisory board. And for me, influence in our club will always come through dialogue and discussion. And our principle has always been that if anybody, whether they are a single fan or they're an organised group of fans, if they want to engage in the club in a constructive way and they believe in the vision to make this club great again, then I'll sit down with them. My door's always open to those conversations. So Socios has nothing to do with supporter influence. Socios is about some low-level fan engagement.
But that's not how they sell it.
Activities. Well, if you look at how they've sold the proposition, it's changed significantly. So originally when they talked about it, they talked about influence. But actually, if you look at the votes that we've agreed with that supporters will be able to vote on, like voting on what might appear on the players' playlist before a game. So you can choose what's going to be. I think they listen to a lot of Buble, I hear from Luke Ayling. But if you want something other than Buble on the playlist, the players will select five or six tracks and then supporters will be able to get to vote on what might go in there. So it's just a way of engaging with the team. We'll be naming some of the pitches at the training grounds. So these are pitches which currently have the catchy titles of pitch 3 and pitch 4, and they might be able to be the Peter Lorimer pitch or the Norman Hunter pitch. Again, they're not about, for me, influencing the direction of the club or the policy of the club. They're just about allowing supporters to engage in a way. So for me, it's not really about influence. And the second thing is about the financial aspect of it. So the first thing is that all season ticket holders and all members are going to receive a token for free. So they're going to have the ability to engage in a way which is at no cost to themselves. And the second thing is that the price of the tokens is £2. So we're not talking about large level cryptocurrency speculation here. We're talking about a small level of investment for ultimately what should be a fun and enjoyable product. But clearly, it's not for everybody. And if you're not interested in it, then don't purchase it.
Yeah, I think the thing is, though, is the way that it's sold is it doesn't close the door to large-scale crypto investment and trying to buy influence, if you like, you know, that people could choose to partake in it like that, thinking that the club needs me to buy 10,000 of these or something like that, you know, to hear my voice or whatever.
Certainly that won't be the message that's coming from our channels. And knowing the Socios team, I don't think that's how they see the product of having evolved anymore. I mean, like everything, that everybody who partners with the club, they're all open to misuse. We have partners in the alcohol category, in the gambling category. We have home appliance partners, you know, don't go and buy a massive TV on credit if you can't afford it. You know, we have a responsibility for our supporters to ensure that they don't get involved in things which are detrimental. But I think this is low level. It's not positioned as a cryptocurrency investment. We will never position it. That is it's a fan token with some engagement opportunities, which hopefully I think supporters will find fun and engaging. It helps the club learn about blockchain and cryptocurrencies. Other clubs are learning, as I think they're going to become more involved in terms of the way that clubs operate in the future. And I can understand some of the reticence towards it, but it's not a big pillar of what Leeds United are doing. It's just another opportunity for Leeds United to move forward financially and hopefully from a fan engagement perspective. But for me, I think it was a bit of a storm in a teacup, and I'd be very, very surprised if in 6 months' time any supporters have got any concerns about Socios at all, because I think they'll have seen how our plans roll out, and they'll know it. Hopefully, they'll know from what we've done to date that at the heart of the club they've got two ownership groups and a chief executive and a director of football who engage with our fans face to face. And certainly, from the feedback I get in the street on a daily basis, the fans are happy with that way of engagement.
But you do understand that we're a fragile and a damaged fan base based on, you know, the last 15, 16 years prior to promotion. We were called sick pots by Ken Bates, and Sean Harvey went on the record and said supporters support. So there's a fragility around the idea of engagement. I think because the Socios thing was hung on the hook of engagement, it feels like we're only just sort of tiptoeing back through those waters at this stage. And, you know, I presume you would accept that mistakes were made around the engagement over the badge. So but you know, to your credit as well, you've engaged over the tickets with the supporters advisory board. So there are two sides to it. But obviously, when it comes to stuff like this, it's an emotive topic. People still have memories of those things. So I think when it's hung on that hook, the engagement hook, that's where that sort of reticence
No, I fully understand it, and we learnt it from the badge very, very acutely. And I still think today, you know, I think we, because of the sort of sins of previous ownerships, you know, we don't have the level of trust amongst the fan base that we would have had if they hadn't had 16 years of failure and disaster. And that's completely understandable. Hopefully what we're trying to establish over time is that our intent behind what we're trying to do, even with the badge, is right. We're trying to push Leeds United forward. We're very, very ambitious in objectives for the club. You know, we don't want to be a mid-table side. I think there is one club in this country, and I hate the phrase top six, but there's one club in this country that can enter the top six, and that's Leeds United. And that's our long-term vision. And to do that, the club is going to have to evolve from how it operated when it was a League One club. And that might be in the terms of how tickets are sold, how our commercial partners are engaged. We won't get all of these things right. But hopefully, as time goes on, all I'd ask is that supporters believe that we're doing these things with the right intent. And I was absolutely comfortable with a lot of the criticism of the Socios deal, and it's fair and it'll be listened to, and we'll make sure our plans evolve to continue to hear it and to deliver a relationship with that partner which works for our supporters. Where I get slightly disappointed is when it turns into an attack on either mine or the ownership's integrity and the intent behind why we're trying to do these things, or it raises doubts as to the financial commitment of our own, not my financial commitment, but the financial commitment of our ownership group, which has been undoubted as well, because I think that's a little bit unfair. I think we're doing these things for the right reasons. The cryptocurrency market is going to be significant in football. Clubs that operate it successfully will have a competitive advantage in the long term. And I think just supporters need to trust us to try and pursue that path and that opportunity in a way which is still in line with Leeds United's values. And they've got my personal commitment that we will.
And finally, then, you mentioned top six. Is that what we're shooting for this season, or what is the aim? I mean, I guess there is a different aim between an accounting perspective and a football perspective.
Yeah. So our finance director, she budgets everything to finish 17th, as you know, that's the most prudent way to do things. You know, and there's so much revenue linked into how the merit payments, where you finish from a positional perspective, and how many times you're on TV. So performance really drives the finances of the club, as well as it does in terms of ticketing and retail. From our perspective, and this is going to sound like a lack of ambition, the vision is to establish ourselves in the Premier League and be a team which is not looking over our shoulder at the start of every season saying, how do we avoid getting relegated? Because speaking to other owners of clubs, that is what absolutely paralyzes development in a club over the long term. If the first question you have at the start of every season is, are we going to go down? Because do you build a new stadium if you think you're going to go down? You don't. Do you stretch yourself to sign a marquee player if you think you're going to go down? You don't. Do you invest in the academy if you think you're going to go down? You don't. So we need to be in that position. And being really candid, there are very few teams who are truly in that position. So if you take the top six out, there's normally only two or three teams who are, you know, so this season it's probably Everton and Aston Villa and maybe West Ham who are going into it saying, okay, now we're looking up rather than we're looking down. But everyone else is looking nervously over their shoulder. We need to be the team which is looking up. And I think the trajectory that Marcelo and Andrea have taken us on, we are now a team which is looking up rather than down. However, you have a 50% chance of getting relegated in your first season, a 50% chance of getting relegated in your second season. Sheffield United proved that with a fantastic first season and a disastrous second season. I don't think we have that type of risk at all. But ultimately, establishing ourselves in the Premier League is the primary objective. However, I think fans, and I think fans should remember that. So when we have some moments this season, we were talking earlier just when I came in, you know, if you look at the fixture list in December and, you know, if we lose at Brentford, then you're playing the top five in succession. There are going to be some challenging periods in this season in the same way that we had challenging periods last season. But we have absolute faith in the team, absolute faith in Marcelo. And for me, success in this season will be completing the platform and the foundations that we built last year to say Leeds United are back and we're looking up.
You'd accept a top half finish, wouldn't you, really, again? I mean, that would be
exactly what I was saying.
It would be, for me, that would be a great outcome, because especially as we get to see it, because we missed it all last season.
Top half would be phenomenal. I think, you know, we want to stay true to the DNA. I mean, it was so disappointing the supporters missed it, but, you know, striding forward with 10 men in the last seconds at Manchester City, it was just phenomenal, because it just showed everything that the club was about. You know, who else would have a midfielder steaming through 30 seconds left when you're at 1-1? So we want to stay true to the values. Hopefully we'll do that. And I think that means that, you know, Elland Road, and for the fans who are lucky enough to attend away, it's going to be incredibly entertaining. And we were lucky enough to be there last season and it was, and we can't wait for crowds to be back. So I think there's lots to look forward to, but I think the supporters should just, we just need to be, although we're hungry for success, we also just need to be patient, and we need to give the team haven't played in front of supporters. And whilst Elland Road, I think, can be, you know, probably is the most intimidating place to play in the Premier League when it's full, you know, we also need to be supportive and not let the nerves and
it can be hard as well.
It can be hard. Yeah. And we saw it in the Championship in the season where we just stuttered at the end. So I know when the Leeds supporters are united behind the team and it really truly is, you know, an unconditional love, then there's nothing limiting the team at all. And I just think this season we should just bear in mind how far the team have come, and just make sure the support's there in the moments which are going to be more challenging.
Angus, thank you.
Pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.